From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. On a wall in a lodge Apa Sherpa owns in his native Nepal, there's a photograph of Apa with Sir Edmund Hillary and certificates from the Guinness Book of World Records. And alongside the mountaineering plaques and pictures are two other prized possessions, a certificate commending Apa's daughter Dawa Sherpa for making the honor roll at Alta High School, and another for his son Pemba for completing a certificate program in computer science. Clear indications of Apa Sherpa's commitment to education. Today on the program, a conversation with one of the world's greatest mountaineers, Apa Sherpa, on his remarkable life and on the causes that are dear to him. Plus, how to make your school a green school, putting environmental ideas into practice. All that and your calls after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. So far in human history, only about 3,000 people have climbed the world's highest peak, but only one has summited Everest more than anyone else, and that man joins me in studio today, Apa Sherpa. He's reached the top of Mount Everest an astounding 21 times, most recently this past May. He's campaigned about the effect global warming is having on the Himalayas, and he's led eco-Everest expeditions for the past 4 years, which have hauled tons of trash off of Everest. He's also the namesake of the Apa Sherpa Foundation, dedicated to supporting education and economic opportunity in Nepal and beyond. And he lives right here in Draper. Apa Sherpa, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer.
Also with us this hour, Terrell Poole. He is CEO of Diamond Mold Incorporated, a Salt Lake City company that builds medical and aerospace tools. And he's sponsored Apa on his previous four climbs, the most recent four climbs. And he was slated to accompany Apa Sherpa on his latest expedition. Terrell Poole is also Apa Sherpa's boss. And Terrell, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Jennifer.
And also Dr. Scott McIntosh, an assistant professor in emergency medicine at the University of Utah. He's a specialist in high altitude and mountain medicine and was the physician on the 2007 Super Sherpa expedition with Apa Sherpa. And Dr. McIntosh, thanks for your time today.
Mm-hmm. Good to be here.
Later on in the program, putting environmental lessons to work in Utah schools. But first, Apa Sherpa. Have you ever wanted to climb Everest? If you're a mountaineer, what calls you to climb? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Apa Sherpa, you've made it to the top 21 times. Before we get to some of the details of your life and some of the causes that you're passionate about, can you describe for us what it actually feels like to be on top of the world, the view, your emotions, the whole experience? Can you describe that for us?
Well, no, the Everest is never easy. So when I got on the first time on the top, so I've been like on the heaven. I was excited. So if I don't get there, then I cannot help for the education and for our neighbors. But so it's good the reason, you know, for helping for the education, yes.
It takes so much effort to do this, and not just to do it once, but multiple times, over and over. Physically demanding, mentally demanding. How long do you spend on the top after all of this work and all this effort? Are you just there for a couple of minutes and you're like, oh, I got to go?
Actually, we should not stay on the top too long, because on the Himalaya, the weather changes very fast. And also, we lose our energy. Mm. So because there's no oxygen over there. But sometimes I have to stay 2 hours. 1.5 and 2 hours like that. No, there was year 2001, and I climbed with the Swiss people, and we have to make the documentary. So I was the first on the top, and I have to wait for the last person. We have to wait two hours over there. Yeah.
So what are you doing during that time? 2 hours can be a long time.
Well, there's no choice. It's too cold, no oxygen. It's too cold, but no choice. I have to. Hmm. wait for them because we have to make the documentary. So, and also this time too, it's almost 2 hours, so I stay on the top because I need to take a lot of pictures. Mm. And weather was unusual, very cold, and too much wind. And when I take a picture, I have to wait for the stop the wind and first take the picture. Yes, so the other way is we should not stay there long on the top. Soon as you get done the picture, we got to go down, yes.
Climbing has been your life's work. Do you like it? Do you enjoy climbing?
Actually, it's not enjoy.
I appreciate your honesty. So I guess the question is, why do you do it?
Well, when I first climb, it's kind of my job because I need to support for my family and for my kids' education. But now, since I got here in the United States, in Utah, so my kids they are doing good. But I like to help our neighbors. My hometown, they have a better education. And they have a better life in the future. So my goal, my legacy is number one for the education. And also the clean up in the environment and the clean up the garbage. So if we don't clean up, so then when the snow melt, so then people have to drink their water. So then people get sick. So that's why, so my request is anyone who is going to climb on the Himalaya, please don't leave the garbage behind. Yeah.
Keep the trail clean. We're speaking with Apa Sherpa. He's reached the top of Mount Everest 21 times. He's the world record holder, and he lives here in Draper. He is continuing his support for education and economic opportunity in Nepal and other places. 801-355-TALK if you have questions or comments for Apa Sherpa. Terrell, I want to ask you if you felt the call of the mountain. Are you a mountaineer in spirit? I know that you tried to go up to this latest expedition with Apa Sherpa, had some health issues and had to come down. But do you understand this mentality, this drive to summit a mountain?
Well, Jennifer, thanks for saying that, or at least offering me the possibility of being a mountaineer in spirit, because that's about as close as I can make a claim. Scott has climbed with Apa to the top, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so that's real climbing. Mm-hmm. So my heart is in it in the sense that I watched Apa leave from Salt Lake 4 years running and had always thought, gee, wouldn't it be great to go? So I had the urge to accompany him, not from the standpoint of climbing Everest, but just to go and see the context, if you will, because his story is so amazing. And year after year would go by, and you know, things have been a struggle since 2008 and so on. It's economically, things have been tough, and we've sponsored Apa, but there was never quite enough fat in the budget to allow me to go. Last year, oddly enough, the opportunity presented itself, and it was kind of a, you know, seize the moment type of thing. So I went, but it wasn't from the perspective of being a climber per se. It was really, in a self-serving sense, it was to promote our business, because while Apa wants to create better education in Nepal and work on environmental issues there, my goal is actually to create jobs here at Diamond Mold. So we all have our agendas, so to speak, and I cannot claim to be a mountain climber, but I love the whole concept.
Dr. McIntosh, do you understand why people want to summit this place and you know, undertake such an amazing challenge?
Yeah, for myself, I've been a climber since college, starting out rock climbing and then moving on to mountaineering. And so I understand very much, and I come from a different perspective from Apa, is that Apa started climbing basically to support himself and his family. And it wasn't really as far as I know, it wasn't really a passion or a pastime that a lot of, you know, Westerners think of climbing. And then I hope that he has, you know, enjoyed some of his climbing over the past, 20 years or so, because it is hard work. And I know that, in high altitude mountaineering, when you are, you know, doing the actual climbing, it's like, you know, the last, it's always like the last six miles of a marathon. You're always tired. You're always, you know, always cold. You're always, but then when you get to the top and come down, then that's when everything really comes together. And I know that on the mountain, when I was lucky enough to be on the mountain with Appa, I know that he would come into camp and shake his head and say, I'm too old for this. but I know that he goes back every year, because it's a really great great thing for him to be able to call attention to the mountain, to environmental awareness, to his children and the people of Nepal, to be able to to support them and to be able to benefit them.
I want to get to the causes in just a moment, but I do want to talk about the physical aspect of this. It's an extreme sport. What effects does altitude and extreme cold have on a body?
Well, it's one of the most demanding environments that exists. When you go up to high altitude, the amount of oxygen, 21%, doesn't decrease, but the pressure of oxygen decreases. And so actually on the summit of Mount Everest, the pressure of oxygen that's driving that into your bloodstream is one-third of that it is at sea level. So you can imagine when you're really exerting yourself very strenuously up at these high altitudes, it really takes a huge toll on your bodies. And I know that some people, when they come back from Everest expeditions, they'll lose 20 pounds and just be absolutely completely exhausted and have to, you know, recover for weeks and sometimes months from it. So it really, you know, it's a really demanding environment, and it puts a lot of pressure on the human body.
I understand that you were doing some measurements of Appa Sherpa's body at different altitudes. What were some of the observations that you had in terms of his heart rate and his ability to think clearly and all of that?
Right. Well, we first did some testing here in Salt Lake and in Park City, just putting them on exercise. Well, normally humans, when we exercise test them, we put them on a treadmill, or we put them on a bicycle. But, you know, Appa doesn't do a whole lot of cycling, and so what we did was put a 50-pound pack on them and put the treadmill on a 25% grade and had them walk up. And
wow.
And then we measured their exercise capacity, and it's pretty remarkable how at least when we were doing this, Appa doesn't routinely exercise like a lot of us do, cycle every day and run every day like the people here, a lot of the people here in Salt Lake do. But he's able to get on the mountain every single year, go right up to base camp, spend a couple days at base camp, and then really go up to camp two, which is at 21 or 22,000 feet, and then come back down to base camp. That's his entire acclimatization schedule, whereas most Westerners will have to take a month or month and a half in order to be prepared to start to march up the mountain for the final summit push.
Is that unusual, or is that just by good fortune that he was able to be born and grow up in Nepal at these high elevations?
Well, all of the above. The Sherpa culture, they have lived at these high altitudes for, it's thought that they've lived at these high altitudes for tens of thousands of years. And up on in the high mountains of Nepal and the high mountains of Tibet. So, it's thought that they are genetically programmed or genetically adapted to do well and perform well at these high altitudes. Whereas, we lowlanders will, if we tried to do the things that they would do, it would not work out very well.
Appa Sherpa, have you ever had altitude sickness?
Well, yes, when I climbed up. First time or first or second times, is not below but above the 26,000 feet. Yeah, sometimes you get altitude, but adopter we used to it. Yeah.
So what's your secret? You don't exercise really. You just arrive on a mountain and you're immediately like the best athlete at doing this. What's your secret?
So So where I live in Nepal, we have not any wheels. So we walk every day. So we don't have to do any training over there. But now I moved here almost 5 years ago now. But so far it's okay. So I didn't do any training here. I just went back to climb. But so far, not any problems. But I don't know if I live for a while here, maybe 4 or 5 years. And I don't know. But so far, not any problem, yes. Hmm. No training, just went back to climb.
How many mountaineers out there are envious right now? I know there are a number. Pasherpa, he is with us. He is the world record holder for climbing Mount Everest. Also with us, Taro Poole, CEO of Diamond Mold, a Salt Lake City company. And Dr. Scott McIntosh, an assistant professor in emergency medicine at the University of Utah. We're talking about Apa Sherpa and his remarkable story. If you'd like to join us, you can. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255 or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Today on the program, Apa Sherpa is with us, talking about climbing Everest, cleaning up the environment, and improving lives in Nepal. If you've got questions or comments, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Apa Sherpa, you've spent your last four expeditions hauling literally tons of trash off of Mount Everest, and yet I understand that you support and encourage more people visiting the mountain. How do you explain this push for tourism with all of the effects that you've seen and your, you know, that you've had to clean up the mess afterward?
Well, those are the garbage. They're not a new garbage. The old garbage.
This is garbage from years and years.
Years and years. People who climb in back in the day, they left the garbage behind. But now we have our Nepali government, they have a very strict now, because people who are going to climb, they have to deposit $4,000 before they climb. So if anyone leave the garbage behind, they don't get back $4,000.
Oh, it's like a safety deposit.
Safety deposit, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot. Now those garbage are not a new garbage, but old garbage. But we already cleaned up within 4 years. It's more than 20,000 kilos garbage done. Hmm. But not only garbage. We clean up the dead body too. Dead body. And also we started...
It was two, wasn't it? You found...
Yes, actually three.
On the mountain.
Actually three.
Mm. Oh, three.
So 3 years. And also we started bring down the human waste. So a friend of mine, the Dao Steven, he came here in 2008 and went to talk American Alpine Club in Colorado. So talk about how to bring the human waste down. So we have two different bags, bring the human waste down. That works good. So you know, in the past, people used to bring the garbage, the human waste only from the base camp, not high on the mountains. Mm. They leave the human waste everywhere. But now, so we started to provide their bag. So now they have to bring their own human waste down. And I hope the young generation, they follow their rules in the future.
Mm, yes. In addition to the human impact that, you know, the impact that people have had on the mountain, you've probably seen some changes in the way that climate change has affected the upper Himalayas.
Yes.
Can you describe the changes you've seen over past couple decades you've been climbing?
There's a big change compared to since I first climbed and now. There's a big change. The one I first climbed, used to be a lot of ice and snow, but now it's more rocky. That means is more dangerous for climbing too. So that's why. So
it's more dangerous.
It's more dangerous because more rocky. So that's why it's very important for to clean up. So I'm saying not only Everest, but my request is all the Himalayas. Should not leave any garbage behind. So that's my goal. Not the, we brought a lot of garbage down, but still I'm thinking, I'm no more climbing, now I'm done, but I'm still going to base camp and clean up the Eco Everest. Yeah, that's my goal. My goal is education and the clean up, the clean the environment.
Well, let's turn to education. Describe the schooling that you had. I understand that you had to drop out of school at a young age because you needed to help support your family. Yes. What are the conditions for children in Nepal right now?
Well, I had a very tough life. So where I lived, we had only the primary school, only up to 5th grade. Then after 5th grade, we have to go to another school. It takes 6 hours, 3 hours go and 3 hours come back. So I had a very tough life. I've been to school 4 years, but I have to walk 6 hours every day. So then I get home, then I'm tired and my homework is not done. I had a lot of problems. And also, especially in the winter, so sometimes a lot of snow. The road is covered by snow. Sometimes we can't see the road where to go. And in the monsoon, when sometimes a lot of rain. So I had a lot of problems. So that's why now I help them up to 7th grade, because up to 5th grade, their kids are still too young. They'll not be able to walk 6 hours. So now we have a 7th grade. So when they have to go walk 6 hours, but when they finish the 7th grade, but kids are there, they are big enough to be able to walk. So that's why my goal is help for the education. And also, then they don't have to carry the heavy load.
Sure.
Otherwise, over there, we have to carry the load more than body weight. I did too. So I hope if we help them, then they don't have to carry that heavy load. That must have a load, yes.
And educational opportunity was one reason you moved to Utah. You've got 3 children, and you wanted them to get the education that you never got.
Yes, I never got it because my kids are there lucky now. So they have a good school here. So, but my kids are there doing good here. But now my goal is I like to help for our hometown for the education.
Dr. McIntosh, what were your impressions of Apa Sherpa's hometown?
So his hometown is Tame, which is at about 12,000 feet, and we actually never went right to Tame. We had hoped to, but we went right up to the mountain instead. But the surrounding areas, it's very basic. It's most of the cooking is done indoors with fire, with wood and fire, and which is reasonable in those areas. But at the same time, when you have people cooking indoors, there's a lot of emphysema and lung problems when after the people who are cooking over and over and over in this environment for decades, and that's a challenge too. And so there is some education on how to do this and how to cook, and I know that that some of the areas with with the environment and with collecting wood is being there's less and less wood because that's just how it's sustained, and Apa can speak more to that. But it's a challenging life. We think that we have it hard over here, and it's it's a whole another world that that Apa grew up in, and the people of Nepal are challenged with every day. But they are hard people, and they do it.
Do you miss your homeland, Apa Sherpa?
Actually, it's not, because I'm going every year.
Oh.
Back and forth, yes. But my kids, yeah, they do, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Taro Pool, your company and you yourself have supported APA in a number of ways. Why give his expeditions and his mission in life, his support of education and his support of the environment, a financial boost?
Well, for us, there are two reasons, really. And what Scott was talking about and what APA was saying about carrying loads heavier than your body weight, the children in Nepal are limited by the education that's available to them. And as APA was saying, if they're able to go to school longer, it gives them a choice of whether they're going to be a porter and carry loads or perhaps do other things. And it's the spirit of that concept that is the reason that Diamond Mold supports APA's efforts. We like to push ourselves to try and do what we can where we can, and by virtue of knowing APA for 5 years, it's sort of a natural for me to participate in that regard. But with that said, the same situation exists right here in Utah, and there's every bit of the same type of reason for supporting education right here and looking out for children who need opportunities right here in the United States. So our thrust is to kind of challenge ourselves to do what we can with APA, but keeping in mind that what the real goal for us is education in general. So we'd like that idea to just kind of rub off and, you know, carry over and sort of set an example and say, hey, look, you know, this is something that we can do, but maybe in your own hometown you can do something similar for reducing class size or whatever it might be that helps out, because it's education for all children everywhere. And in some sense, APA's the tip of the iceberg or the top of the mountain, so to speak. And it's easy to understand the issues in Nepal, harder to understand them in a country like the United States. But we need to do more here, too.
Taro Pool, he is CEO of Diamond Mold, a sponsor of APA Sherpa. Also with us, Dr. Scott McIntosh, a specialist in high altitude and mountain medicine. He accompanied APA Sherpa on the 2007 expedition. And also with us, APA Sherpa, who has reached the top of Mount Everest 21 times. He will be speaking about his experiences tonight at 7 o'clock at the Huntsman Cancer Institute in the Eccles Auditorium. You can find more information on our website, kcpw.org. APA Sherpa, you told a colleague, I'm trying to remember which summit this was that I was reading about, but you said, I'm at the top and I'm looking at all the prayer flags. I've just satisfied the deities and placed the bumpa on a summit?
It's pumba, yeah.
Pumba. Okay. What is that? That's a vase?
The pumba is a kind of the like a part, the bronze part.
Mm-hmm.
But inside the lama told me there's a reincarnated lama. He told me there's more than 40 element inside for the peace in the world, and also stop the climate change, those kind of things. All the negative.
Sure.
Yes, thanks. The Lama sent with me, then I took on the top, and then, yes, we called it Pumba, yes.
This little snippet of a blog entry indicates to me that Everest is a very spiritual place for you.
Yes.
Maybe talk about the religious significance that Everest has for you and for your culture.
Yes, that's why. So every time we go to climb, we have to do the puja ceremony first.
What does that consist of?
The puja, the ceremony. We have to, first of make Chomolongma, the mother goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And we make a happy, you know, the safe climb and safe comeback. So we call it Chomolongma, but Everest is English, but Nepal is Sagar Mata. That's why all the climbers, they have to do the puja ceremony first.
So pay your respects to the mountain and ask for safety.
Safety, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very important, yes.
Do you dream about Everest? I mean, does it occupy your thoughts all the time? Because you're only going there once a year now.
Well, this yes, in the night, you know, we dream. The women's because the mother goddess, the god is woman. Yes, sometimes we dream. Yes, but we have to respect every time. So that's why we burn the incense in the morning and evening to respect for the gods. Yes, this is very important. Yeah, we do the puja every morning and every evening. Yes,
it's very sacred.
Very sacred. Yes,
for you.
Actually, the Iskari, Dr. Iskar knows what what we're doing over there. Yes.
You saw the ceremony,
Dr.
McIntosh?
The moment that the expedition landed in Kathmandu, which is the capital of Nepal, there was a ceremony that night. There was a ceremony the next morning. There was a ceremony. There were about, I'm trying to remember, maybe about 14 ceremonies between Kathmandu and Everest Base Camp just to meet with the lamas and to request a safe journey and request a safe experience on the mountain, because there are a lot of things that can go wrong, and there's also a code of rules that you have on the mountain. There's some things that you do that you can do when you're near on Chamalongma, which is the translation Mother Goddess of the Earth, and some things that you're not supposed to do. So it's a very very sacred area and a very respected place for the Nepali people.
When you were on your expedition, what did you learn about Apa Sherpa that maybe the average person might not know?
the Nepali people really they have a number of different ideas. You know, they very much have a deep respect for the mountain. That's one of the things that I noticed, and it's sometimes challenging to see, you know, other people from the U.S. or from other parts of the world come to their sacred area and, like I say, like Apa was saying, leave their trash or just not respect it in the sort of way that the Nepali people do. I realize that Apa is he's a very hardworking person and he really gets the job done. And then when things are towards the end and everyone is safe and everyone has come down from the mountain, then he really has a good time. there's a lot of feasting and a lot of good times to be had at base camp afterwards, Apa included.
Taro Poole, how has Apa Sherpa affected your life? You've known him for a number of years now.
Oh, he's had a tremendous impact on mine as well as the rest of the people that work at Diamond Mold. He's set a standard for us as far as aspiring to things that are beyond our reach, and at the same time, watching how he goes about his work on a daily basis, there is nobody that I've ever met who's as humble as Apa Sherpa, and I think that lesson is something that you don't actually teach, but it sort of wafts over you. And in 5 years, I like to think that we've all benefited, myself included, from the from Apa's good spirit and just how his humility transcends every situation and kind of puts in perspective what's important and what isn't. I could go on and on, but I really would like to say thank you to Apa for being part of my life and also having such a great impact on the lives of people that are close to me.
Our time is just about up, but Apa Sherpa, you're 51-ish, somewhere in that range. How many more climbs do you have in you?
You mean in the future?
Yes.
No, I'm done now. So.
You're done.
Yeah,
you're hanging
done.
Up your hat.
I'm no more.
How come?
So now I like to enjoy with my family, because every time I go climb and my family, they are very worried about me. And every time they say no more, no more. Yeah, now everybody says that 21 is a good number. Now I stop the other 21 for the good number, and I like to enjoy with my family. So
what's the greatest lesson that you learned from your experience as a mountaineer? What's the thing that you're going to remember most about your climbs on Mount Everest?
Now I can help for the education for the school. That's good to remember. And also, the legacy is for the education and for in the future. So if I don't climb, then I have no any legacy. But yeah, so my legacy is education for. So that's a good memory, yes.
Apa Sherpa, he is the record holder for the number of times summiting Mount Everest. He's reached the top 21 times, and it's going to stand at 21. Apa Sherpa, thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Also with us, Terrell Poole, CEO of Diamond Mold. Thanks to you.
Thanks, Jennifer.
And Dr. Scott McIntosh, assistant professor in emergency medicine at the University of Utah. Doctor, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Apa Sherpa will speak about his experiences tonight at 7 at the Huntsman Cancer Institute in the Eccles Auditorium. You can find out all the details on our website, kcpw.org. Coming up next, greening up the playground, how to make your school more environmentally friendly. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.